Hello, everybody, and welcome to our IME Office Hours call for the month of November 2018. And we're here for a call where you get to come and get support on whatever questions you might have about the programs that you're in and the interesting. I see Sandy Zeitman. Am I on? And which call am I on? let's see. This is on.
Yeah, I was just talking. I was just. It is the IME Office Hours.
I wonder who was sent the
email. Well, she clicked on a replay link and it brought her here. And,
oh, Lordy.
And I know. So
okay.
She was just going to listen and they said,
she's
you know,
welcome,
you're welcome
to listen. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if, you know, I got to get back to my screen. I was just going to see. Okay. So yeah, Sandy, hi. I was like, am I on the wrong call? So this is our Institute of Nutritional Endocrinology Office Hours call. And this is a call for anybody in the variety of practitioner training programs that we have. So that would be our NEPT programmer, NEPT core program, our insulin resistance practitioner training, or our CMDS digestive mastery. And if we have any other practitioner programs that I didn't mention, I guess I forgot about them, and you're welcome here too. And this is where you get to come and ask questions about content of the modules and anything and how you put it into practice and whatever it means to straighten it out. Labs that you want to, you know, talk about how you would analyze, what labs you might order for your clients, talk about particular client cases. And you can also talk about your own health in regards to, in a way that's asking it such that people will learn, like, you know, I am a 27-year-old female with this, that, and the other problem, and I'm, you know, got this, that, and the other, and I'd love support and what are my next steps so that we can support you, and what would be the next steps that you would take for yourself, or if it's a client, what you would take there. So it's a slightly different focus than if you're on like our vital call or our office hours call for the client programs, where you would ask, you know, hey, I've got this going on, what should I do? On these calls, it's more, what are going to be your next steps and what's missing and what you're doing so far, so we can treat it like it is a case, which it is, that helps everybody else. So we're here and I'm here, and the way this works is you can raise your hand, star 2 on the phone, and I will open up your line. It sounded like Michelle had a question. So Michelle, just put your hand up, star 2, so I know that you really do have a question. And then we've got the Q&A if you're on the web, and I'm going to start my chat. Let's see who's on there. And we have the chat, which looks like there's a lot of folks there already. And what I usually do is I start by just checking the Q&A to see if anybody that was on before the call submitted a question, so that their questions are answered right at the beginning, and then we can move on to the rest. And it looks like these are from the last call. Did I give in the wrong call? Let me just go look to see if. So that's okay, but just let me make sure I'm in the right call. So.
Well, actually, I was surprised because I don't see anybody or any questions. So I was wondering if I was on the
right. I might have clicked the wrong one. I might have clicked the vital. So I'm going to click another one so I see the right. The phone, it doesn't matter. But as far as control panel, they wouldn't have heard me if they're on. Let's see. Yeah, it's spinning. Yeah. All right. Hello. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Somebody has, I have two questions, and then Susan L is here. Okay. So Dr. Let me see. So I'm logged in and I can see the chat and now Q&A, and I probably don't see any now. Cause yeah, I was seeing it from the previous call and I'm like, I answered those questions 2 hours ago. All right. So let's start with Michelle. Let me open up your line, and then Susan L. All right. So, Michelle, hey.
Hey, I have two questions, one clinical, one practice. The first one, clinical, I was listening to a program with Dr. Weatherby. He was talking about detox programs, and he was integrating whey proteins because of the immunoglobulins. I wanted to know if there's an alternative to whey proteins that would do the same thing. And then the second question is, I wanted to know if you could tell me how I can create an affiliate program to be able to pay people commissions for referring people to my retreat program.
Okay. Yeah. So two things. So as far as whey protein, I'm not a fan. Mainly, I'm not a fan. Number one, I prefer plant-based stuff. But number two, outside of that bias, Whey has been shown to raise insulin without raising glucose. So I'm really careful about it in people who are insulin resistant. So as far as immunoglobulins, you know, I don't know how many of the immunoglobulins are actually still present in the whey protein after it's processed. It's going to depend on whether it was heat processed or cold processed. And you got to be careful because there's only a few ways that are not heat processed. So the immunoglobulins will get destroyed. I would prefer if somebody really does need the immunoglobulins that we, and you really think that they need to take the immunoglobulins at that point rather than stimulating their own, that you can certainly go with, getting like, colostrum or something like that. And I don't think there's cruelty involved in the colostrum other than starving the poor baby calves for the first 2 days of their mama's best stuff. But if it's from an ethical perspective that, you know, don't want to use something that's from an animal origin, I don't know of specifically, you know, immunoglobulin replacement. Here's an echo, so I'm just going to turn you off for a second. I'll put you on lecture so you can just start to open yourself, but because I'm echoing. So, you know, and I think other proteins are really very supportive of healing of the gut. I think that it depends on why you want the immunoglobulins. If you're looking for the immunoglobulins, like say somebody has a leaky gut and you're looking to help them heal, that's a different perspective than someone who has a super challenged immune system that they're not making the immunoglobulins alone. So I think I'd rather address this on a case-by-case basis, like what's going on for this person and what would be a good approach. But if it's truly for healing a leaky gut, things that support collagen production, so, for example, sea vegetables, mushrooms, there's a lot of recipes for quote-unquote vegan bone broth that you can do to support collagen production to help heal the leaky gut. There's things you can do to support the immune system, and there's one in particular I'm thinking, and I can't remember the exact term for it, IL, that's interleukin-3. It's a stimulant for helping people to produce more of their own immunoglobulins, if you know what I mean. So I guess it depends on what's going on. So if you tell me more about that, let me talk about the other program too, the affiliate thing. And then, cause I'll have questions and then I'll open your line up and we can have you talk and I'll listen and then I'll shut your line again, cause there's an echo. So as far as an affiliate program, it depends on what software you're using to record your sales. So if you let me know that, and then the other thing it would depend on is, what are you using as a customer management to keep track of your database? And I think it's MailChimp, if I remember correctly. So I'm going to open your line, and you can answer me some of those questions.
In terms of my platform is I use Acuity, my scheduler, and then I have Square as my credit card processing. That's the only software I can think of. Well, I mean, I have MailChimp and I have also Sendwit in terms of my emailing kind of stuff.
Okay.
And then in terms of the immunoglobulins, I'm looking to increase the secretory IgA because it's like practically nil.
Got it. Okay. So I could talk specifically about SIGA. I've found that vitamin A is often deficient in folks with low Sig IgA. So I would be looking at vitamin A to repair that. Also, Alma is a really good one. Alma, triple Ayurvedic. It's got Amla Taki and two others that I can't pronounce. But Alma has been shown to be real supportive there. And then, vitamin C to an extent, but it's mostly the A and the Amla that I've used effectively to raise SIGA. And then if you do that with a good protein to help support the gut lining, that could be whatever they tolerate or a combination of them. I like Satcha Inchi protein. There's even pumpkin seed protein and some others that are there that support that.
Okay.
Okay. Now, as far as the, I'm going to just mute you for a second. As far as what you're using, I don't think any of them have a built-in affiliate program. So I didn't know you could use Square to process payments through the computer. Is that just payments that you do for people in person?
No, it processes through the computer because it links up to Acuity. So whenever anybody books through my Acuity, it automatically takes their funds, and I can also go into Square and send out invoices and things of that nature.
Okay. All right. That's good to know. So you're going to need to look for an affiliate software plugin that's going to work with those. And I'm not real familiar. I think if you just go Google search some of them, and if you come up with some, I may have been familiar with them just from hearing some of my colleagues talk about it. I know some people use, what's that? There's one that goes with that Shopify type thing. But I think you're just going to have to look for an external affiliate plugin that will keep track of your affiliates. Oh, you know what else does it? What's the name of that one? I'm drawing a blank. ClickFunnels does. They have an affiliate management program in there, but it ends up being $300 a month for that level of ClickFunnels. So that's expensive. The other one that we had used for a little while, and we were disillusioned because it wouldn't interface with our affiliate program in Infusionsoft, and we quit, and I'm going to look it up and see if I have it in my notes, really, to look it up. It's a system where it helps you, you can create order forms, and it collects payments through, it might actually be through Square, actually. Give me a second, see if I can find it in my basket here. Marketing and sales. On his website. I'll recognize it if I see it, but I'm not seeing it in my, let me see if it's in here. We had used it for a sale that we did after our sweet spot, not last year, but the year before. We thought, oh, this is so cool, and it lets you do upsells and downsells. I mean, it would be ideal. I think it was like $97 a month, but it was definitely had some good stuff in it. And if you didn't have if I didn't already have an affiliate program, I would have liked it, but it wasn't working with Infusionsoft, so I quit it. Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to look it up in our records. Why don't you shoot me an email to remind me to look it up? And I know I can find it. I just can't easily find it right now. But it was a really cool little program where you can create your order forms. So, and then if you wanted to say you just sold them a $97 group program and you wanted to be able to offer an upsell to 3 months private coaching, right there on there, they call it a bump, an order bump or whatever, that you can do this really cool little page and it'll automatically handle it. And then you have to set an account through, I think it was Square, now that I think about it. Square or something like that. Stripe. No, it was Stripe. You had to set an account through Stripe, which is free, totally free. And then they had an affiliate program built into this thing. If I can remember what it was, I can't remember the name of the main program. But that might be something to look into for that. The other way you can do it is if it's small numbers, then you just hand calculate it, right? You can, let me think. If you're giving someone, there's a couple of ways you can do it. There's ways to do tracking links where you give them a separate link to a page, like each affiliate would get a different link for sending them to the order form. And then you just have to manually track which ones made the sales. Does that make sense? It's a little less, it's a little more complicated, but start by doing a search on it. Let me just do this real quick. Affiliate. And I'm just going to say that work with MailChimp. That way it would coordinate with MailChimp. Shopify is one. It was right. Email marketing about affiliate links in MailChimp. MailChimp affiliate marketing. Does MailChimp have an affiliate program? This might tell you. Do a search on MailChimp and affiliate program and see if anything comes up that people talk about, like what they've used with it to do it. different. No, it's different.
Yeah,
I would say that's it, because it's not within my, you know, I've only used it with, let me open you up. Where are you? I've only used it with Infusionsoft, and in Infusionsoft, it's really easy. We just give them a link. We set them up as an affiliate. We give them a special link. They send everything there, and then Infusionsoft tracks it. But I'm pretty sure there's software that you can use as a plugin. It's just a matter of finding the one that works best. And there may be something that ties into Acuity that you just don't know about yet. All right?
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Susan.
Okay. I have a question that I haven't been able to find a deep dive in to and with my NAPT modules just yet. I'm sure it's in there, but probably not open stuff yet. So regarding the two inflammation markers, homocysteine and CRP, mm-hmm. It's my understanding that the CRP seems to be mostly related to what's going on inside the blood, whereas the homocysteine is beyond that. Can you explain exactly the difference between?
Yeah, so homocysteine is a chemical that damages the blood vessels. And it's not necessarily what I would call an inflammatory marker, although it is an indication that there's inflammation going on. So when the homocysteine is elevated, it's my understanding that that would, because it causes damage to the blood vessels and to the nerves, that could increase the inflammatory markers. So that could increase CRP or erythrocyte sedimentation rate or other markers of inflammation. So they're different. So homocysteine is actually an acid, a byproduct that's in the methylation pathway. And when you don't have enough methyl groups to fully convert it around and turn it into SAMe and get it out of the methylation pathway, it builds up. When it builds up, it can be highly damaging to the blood vessel linings. So it's very specific to the blood vessel linings and the nerve linings in particular. I don't know it. There's possible that it makes other widespread inflammation, but those are the areas that it's been most linked to. C-reactive protein is definitely, like the hsCRP is definitely associated with inflammation within the blood vessels itself. It's also associated with inflammation elsewhere. For example, after a bronchitis or some sort of infectious disease, you can see elevations in C-reactive protein. During autoimmune diseases, most of the time you see elevation in C-reactive protein.
Okay. Well, that's helpful because I've seen quite a few labs where the CRP is super low. You know, it's like there doesn't seem to be any indication that that's an issue, but the homocysteine is high.
Yep.
So I was trying to say, so what is that telling me? That there is a compromised methylation cycle?
Yes.
Typically?
Yes. Typically deficiencies of B6, B12, and folate, and you're not able to get around. And it depends on how high that homocysteine is. The range that they give as normal in medicine, I think it goes up to 12. In functional medicine, we more look at 8, anything over that. So it could be that it's there and it's causing damage, but it's still silent damage and it's not enough to cause a widespread inflammatory response. But it's still there causing damage and we want to get it under control.
Right. Okay. That's super helpful.
Good. Thank you.
I have another question, but somebody else can go if they need to.
No, you have another question. Nobody else has their hand up.
Oh, okay. So I had an interesting thing happen with my son who is with me at Shine.
Mm-hmm.
He's always had an issue having his blood drawn. Like, you know, here's this strapping young man with these big, you know, veins that stick out. But for some reason, they're having issues pulling his blood. And so he went to go do something that terrified him, which was to give blood. He just felt like, you know, I need to give blood. And he went with a group of friends. And he had a heck of a time having his blood drawn. It was going too slow, and the alarms kept going off and all that. And it was a crazy thing. And then they did his blood pressure, and it was 130 over 52.
Ooh.
So, and he said he was about to pass out. So can you explain, like, give me some insights. We've not done any blood work on him, so I don't know.
So that concerns me, that is blood pressure. I mean, it may have been just a stress response, but I check his blood pressure at other times. The difference between the diastolic and the systolic is called pulse pressure. And typically what we see is like, 120 over 80, like a 40-point difference, right? You said 130 over 52?
Yes.
That's a huge pulse pressure, right? And, I have to kind of refresh my memory on the different causes of that, but I think of it in terms of that there may be, some pressure somewhere. Is he a weightlifter, bodybuilder of any kind?
No. I mean, he works out regularly. I just think it's a stress response to that, just the whole situation.
I would check his blood pressure, because there's two concerns here, right? One is what the heck is going on with his vessels that you can't get it out. But the lack of the diastolic, the low diastolic may explain it, because once they strap it, right, and that there's just not enough flowing through at rest to really get a good pressure of pushing the blood pressure out. So that, that pulse pressure difference might be just a thing that was under stress. So I would check that. Check them out a few times and just see what that variation is. And if you tend to have a wide gap in pulse pressure, then we need to look and investigate a little bit further as to why that's there. I was thinking in terms of like one-sided or like tightness in some of the muscles, like in the chest, that may be cutting off like the brachial plexus. So if he's like this big strapping, lots of muscles in his neck and his chest, and then the whole brachial plexus comes out and through what's called the thoracic outlet, if that's being pressed, that may make it hard for them to get the blood out.
I don't know about that, but certainly possible. I did buy a blood pressure arm cuff, so I will test that.
Those are fairly, they may not be exactly predictable every time, but they're going to be relatively accurate.
Right. The issue of just that it's so hard to pull blood from him.
Well, with the diastolic of 52, that could explain that, why it's just
so
not getting pressure.
It's just not pumping into the needle, into the tube.
Yeah, because how they strap off the arm? Right? So they put the tourniquet type of thing above where they're pulling the blood from, And then he just may not have enough pressure to go past that.
Very interesting.
That's just my guess. And I'm looking something up on pulse pressure. The most important cause of elevated pulse pressure is stiffness of the aorta. How old is he, like 23 or something?
He just turned 25.
Yeah, so he's young. High blood pressure, fatty deposits. I would definitely check it on normal situations and then get some blood work done on them to see if there's any indications of lipid imbalances, high triglycerides, high cholesterol, high LDLs, low HDLs.
So would he be a candidate then for the Cardio IQ from Dr. Hopkins?
Sure, yeah. I mean, do you have family history of heart disease, and do you have any of those abnormalities?
No, because I just ran those two tests for my husband and I, and we came back clean.
You came back clean, so probably not. I would start with the basic, and if you see some abnormalities there on your basic lipid panel, then I would go a little higher, a little more in depth. But I would start with the basics.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right.
Just take a look and see if there's any weird stuff going on there. Like it's, I'm thinking and looking at some of these things, and it's bringing back memory. Lack of elasticity in the vessels. Build up in the vessel. So it's, elevated pulse pressure is definitely something. Could be an anemia, iron deficiency anemia, overactive thyroid can increase pulse pressure. So these are some of the things that I would be looking up. And look up pulse pressure.
Yeah.
But check it first to see if that just wasn't a stress response because he was in that.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Okay. That's cool. I know he eats like I do, on the sweet spot way. So his diet is for years. I would think if indeed this is an issue, the pulse pressure thing, then it's got to be something not diet related, what do you call that, physiological, mechanical?
It could be a mechanical thing, right? I would research the pulse pressure issue, but before you do, check it may be that he just has very low blood pressure. then if he has low blood pressure, then it could be a problem with that 52. If typically his blood pressure is like, you know, 90 over 60, that would maybe make it more difficult. And then just, I haven't looked it up, but look up and see if you can find any research on what makes it difficult for blood flow during blood draw.
Cool. Okay, great. That gives me a direction.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Cool. All right. Who's next? Let me see. I'm going to find my way back now that I've left the site to look at internet. Okay, so Susan, did I not put your thing down, or do you have your hand up again, Michelle?
I had my hand up again.
Okay.
Just with regards to the pulse pressure thing, Dr. Laila Africa has what he calls a pulse, blood pressure pulse table. And when you map the systolic that she talks about with 130 over the diastolic of 52, it says if he has a pulse rate between 50 and 40, then it could be mapped to an overworked heart and heart muscle degeneration.
Mm.
Because he has a whole table of different correspondences depending upon the systolic and the diastolic as well as the pulse of the individual.
What was that person's name again, so we could put it in the chat?
Dr. Laila Africa, otherwise known as Dr. Africa.
Dr. Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. How do you spell the first name?
Laila, L-L-I-A-L-A, and Africa, A-F-R-I-K-A.
Okay, good. We'll look at that. Yeah, that's good to know. Because you do. Yeah, whenever I hear a pulse pressure like that in any person, let alone a young person, it's like I want to look and find out what's the underlying.
And it's called the blood pressure and pulse table.
Thank you. Anybody here a phlebotomist that may want to add to why there may be some difficulties with that? A phlebotomist, a nurse? That would be helpful. All right. Thank you, Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let me look. I don't see any more questions in the chat. Let's see in the QA. And I have Michelle. Oh, good. Thank you. We just talked about that. Cool. So I don't see any other questions. Oh, good. Lynn just posted it, drafrica.com. All right. More questions? Otherwise, we can call it a day early. I don't mind. No? Star 2? Lynn, you want to add anything?
Actually, I have a question.
Sure.
I was talking to somebody who has candida, and one of the things, and it's chronic, we've had it for years, and we've been working on different things, but in my looking to see what, you know, other ideas and things, I was looking at low-light laser therapy. And I was a little familiar with it, but not overly. And so I was curious if you had more experience with it or understanding. I've looked at a few of the studies.
Yeah, so laser as in whole body laser type of thing? I mean, there's a lot of ways to use lasers.
No, it's more like something, because the studies I was looking at were using it for different things. Some of it was using it for brain function, but it was basically something you could hold in your hand, and like you could put it on your belly, and okay, have that therapy going on that way.
I am not familiar with, you know, I haven't done much research or anything on that with the use of it in things like candida. I've used and researched and used laser in relationship to injuries, like muscle injuries, recovery type of things, and doing it right over the joints where there's pain, and it speeds up healing and decreases pain. But I'm not familiar with using it for candida.
Okay.
You know, and it's expensive, so it's not something you want to just go, well, it's worth a try, right? Just go spend $20 and
Right. Yeah, well, it's that. Not $20.
No. It's hundreds or even thousands.
And that's,
you know, just going for a treatment could be more. And I don't know that you'd notice after one treatment, right? So, I mean, I think I would probably be looking at the first I would be looking at the normal ranges of, you know, what's going on, what's the imbalance, what else is going on in the flora, like all of that. And then after all that's exhausted, then it may be like, well, we can give this a try. There's some research on it. But those are kind of things that are more the zebras rather than the horses.
Right. And that's kind of where we're at. So that's why I was looking.
Okay.
Yeah. And we're doing
stool tests.
We're addressing an organic acid test.
Well, if you haven't done a stool test, you haven't done it. You know what I mean? It's like if you're going with an organic acid test and you're kind of guessing at what protocols to use, you know, cleaned up the diet, eating under good stress, enzymes, probiotics, et cetera, then you want to look at the stool because it's the way I would look at it. The organic acid said there is a problem. And a lot of times you can go, okay, there's a problem here. Let's address it. We redo the organic acid test, or after doing a protocol, they get better. With the stool test, you're getting specifics. You're getting what organisms live there, what's the distribution between bifidus and lacto and some of the other normal flora, what is some of the commensal flora, what's the pH of the GI tract, how's the secretory IgA, are they producing enough pancreatic enzymes, is there inflammation in there, and then if there are bugs that are identified, which strains of candida, there's a lot of them, they're all going to be a little bit differently sensitive, and then what's the sensitivities and what's actually going to kill it. So those are the kind of approaches I would do before. I mean, certainly if she has a husband who's a practitioner and happens to use low light laser, like, sure, do it, or she has a friend who's willing to do it. But the investment in it before ruling out all the other avenues, I from my perspective, is a little bit high.
Unless they why I haven't recommended it, because of that, I'm just doing more research because we've been doing a lot of these things, and so just not the stool test. I've done the organic acid test, so I'll write that down as well. But it also comes down to because she'll make good progress and then stop, and so we're addressing so those other emotional, and of which there are many. So,
and that's the thing. Here's the thing: as practitioners, what a lot of us do. So we start somebody on some specific protocol program, and they're doing really well. And then all of a sudden, the program it stops, and then you find out, well, they stopped doing the program. They stopped doing the things. And instead of going, well, let's just go back to what we know works because it was working, we are like mistrusting ourselves and looking for, well, what did I miss? Did I miss this? Did I miss that? And we're looking for that needle in the haystack. And in reality, it's the compliance piece. And like you said, it's looking at why can't she keep up with it? So I would say those are all the things before starting to do all kinds of research on all sorts of other stuff. It's having those difficult conversations with the client and said, look, we knew this was working. You know, what was it that caused you to stop, and how can we get you to keep going? And the importance of sticking with it until you redo a test, checking to see what needs to be altered based on the test, and sticking with it after that. And I had a conversation with someone, I don't remember who it was, whether it was a practitioner or a client yesterday, but it was related to when you go on a program, you do a test, you go on a program, you get the test results back again, and it looks like it's cleared. You don't just cold turkey stop the program at that point. What you've got to do is then gently wean off of it and then retest to see. And so if I wean off of this slowly and then a month later the symptoms are starting to come back, I'm going back up to those doses because, you might have gotten it under control and the test is normal, but you may need to stay on that particular regime for longer, 3 weeks, 6 weeks, 9 weeks, 12 months, 12 weeks, right? And then you're slowly taking it away. And then retesting, because when you go on a protocol, especially gut, because you do all this stuff and you're getting the balance there and everything's looking good, but just because it looks good on paper doesn't mean there's no traces of this stuff. It just means it's below detectable limits. And then those below detectable limits, when you take away, say, the balance of the good probiotics, or you take away the whatever biocidin or whatever other kinds of things you might be giving to kill off the bad guys, you take those away, then the strong survive, remember? The last of them to get killed off are going to be the strongest. And so now you've got this colony of the strongest, and you may stay latent for a little while they're growing up to be grown-ups. and then they populate, and now the symptoms are worse than ever because you just selected for the strongest of these pathogens. So I think it's super important that when we're working with people that we don't just, oh, test that, stop the protocol. No, that we learn how
Absolutely agree. Like we were having this conversation, I don't know, it was a practitioner call, I'm not sure which one, but where we don't look at them as the enemy. And I think it was with Laura Ricci we were talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
And
She stated it beautifully in the line.
Yeah, and I know Steph has talked about this as well. It's not us against them. It's not this war or battle. And it's living in community, basically, which is something that's actually a natural part of our body. And so I'm talking to her about this as well. And so I do have an ulterior motive in talking to her or sharing with her about this laser because it is expensive. And I don't want her to just be doing a this for that thing, because that can be a wake-up call to really, you know, it's like, look, we can do these easy things with food and your lifestyle, and they're not expensive. They, you know, you can do these things, or you can spend a lot of money and get this laser, and the studies aren't clear on how they'll.
Yeah, and
work.
It's not getting to the root cause either, really. It's
right.
Just pulling the
exactly.
stuff off. Why did the stuff go out of control? The other thing with that is, did she bring up the laser thing or you? Mm. Did she find it?
She had mentioned it. And because she's grasping at straws. But she's grasping at straws with a lot of things. And so she mentioned a few things. And I said, well, you know, part of it is being listened to and validated. So I did
the research for you, and here's what I found, and here's what we're going for is balance. And a lot of times when we talk to people about the hard stuff, changing their diet and lifestyle, that piece, they just want to do it for a while and go back. And I always have to say, no, this is a lifestyle choice. This is a change. Like Susan Larson said on another call, she goes, sweet spot saved me. And that's my lifestyle forever. That's why I'm going to do it, because I don't want to go back there. And that's the way we need to help people to see. But they've been so conditioned to the this for that. And here, take this pill for 6 weeks or 6 months or 6 days or whatever it is. And it's going to cure you. And it doesn't. And the thing I always try to say to people, you know, especially people who are dealing with heart disease and stuff and they don't want to make the changes, it's like, well, yeah, I have a couple of alternatives for you. You can, you know, do this and eat this way and, you know, do some meditation and let's get all this stuff going. Or you can go into the hospital and you can have them saw open your chest and crack your rib cage, pull out your heart, put it on a machine for several hours while they refix the plumbing, put it back in, and then you can go back to the same lifestyle, and then you can rinse and repeat and go back and do that again in 5 years. Which is harder, having somebody crack open your chest or changing your diet?
The extreme, yeah.
Right? And that is the extreme, but it happens all the time. It's happened to my family members. It's happened, you know, and it's like they don't want to hear that, but they came to you for a reason, because they're open to alternatives. And we're about helping them to see that health is about balance, whether, you know, it's on all levels, mind, body, spirit, you know, it's healing traumas. It's healing physical injuries. It's healing the mental, the pain, the limiting beliefs about deserving, and it's accessing this amazing ability to heal. I mean, an interesting story, talking to somebody who has experienced firsthand multiple personalities. And to me, this is the ultimate in how the mind changes the body. And she remembers like waking up and having this big gash across her stomach, you know, kind of oozy, bleedy kind of gash. And she's like, where the hell did this come from? Like, what? And then she, you know, went about her day, and then she went back and she apparently switched personalities. So she knew she had multiple personalities, and she switched personalities. And she looked at her belly, and the gash was gone. that the consciousness of that other personality which lived in her, that other brain consciousness, healed that wound because it wasn't part of her consciousness.
Oh.
So it was shocking.
Yeah.
And we see that. People have go into the optometrist with different personalities. This is well documented. And they have different visual prescriptions. So, you know, when Claudia talks about changing our vision, right? It's by changing our mind and our habits. That proves it, right? You have a multiple personality in one physical body, but it's a different consciousness. And the one manifests in needing these bifocals and the other is perfect vision. How does that happen? Because the consciousness controls the physical and cellular expression. And that's why when Laura Fine talked at Chime last week, the way she spoke about that work, that body of work of removing those subconscious blocks and how all this stuff lives in the subconscious. And we know things live in the subconscious because we don't have to think about, okay, is my heart beating? Is it beating 60 times this minute? I better help it. I better move it. Am I blood? You know, we don't think about that. Did I produce enough, you know, cholecystokinin to digest that meal? But we don't have to think about those things, right? The subconscious knows how to do it. And there's layers of that subconscious that are sabotaging us, that are keeping us trapped in these positions of belief. And when we can move those patterns, we can change the cells. And that's borne out by a lot of this stuff. And if you start to do research on multiple personality disorder, you're going to see a lot of that, like, shocking stuff that comes out. So belief system, the first, you know, really helping your clients come into what's important to me and what's my belief system about healing. I believe I can heal anything. And if I haven't figured out what to do, there's something limiting me, and I want to know what that is, and I'm going to let go of it, and I'm going to just breathe and access my inner healer and use it, access it through meditation or through heart mass or through whatever other means, tapping, you know, the Laura Fine's work, whatever it is, to get at what is that subconscious limiting belief that's keeping my tissues trapped into reproducing over and over again into this dysfunctional pattern. I'm just my two cents. It's just my opinion. You can take it or leave it.
It's fascinating.
You know, yeah. We have so much control that we don't believe we do. We don't know that we do. And that's that placebo effect. I've told this story before. I think I heard it from David Winston or some, one of my mentors at some point in my life. And it was all about this man who had terminal cancer. He was in the hospital. And he'd read something about some study, and they were going to do this study, and the doctor tried to get him into the study but couldn't. But the doctor said, you know what, I'm going to try the placebo thing. I'm just going to say, look, you were approved for this trial, and here's the medication. We're going to administer this. And he did this before he left on a Friday. The guy had been diagnosed, you know, so badly he was expected to be dead by Monday. And by Monday, he went back into the room, and the guy's gone. And he goes, oh, my God, did Mr. Smith pass away over the weekend? And the nurse said, no, he checked out. Like, what do you mean he checked out? He was fine. Like, we just missed him. And I was like, what? So the guy, you know, went about and had months of really good life. And then he read a study that said that drug was actually found to be ineffective. He had a relapse. Ended up back in the hospital. The doctor explained to the doctor, and the doctor said, oh, you know, she goes, let me look into it. He goes, oh, well, yeah, I didn't, but here's something else that's found to be, you know, similar or whatever. He used the placebo effect on the guy again. The guy recovered again, but then the guy read another story, and then he finally did die. But that's how effective the mind is, that power of the subconscious is on the mind, and then why the placebo effect, you know, you are the placebo. Just Dispenza's book is so magnificent that way. That we really need to work with people, not just on the habits, but on the mindset and on the belief system, and knowing that every choice matters, and we get to choose. We get to choose what we think in this moment. We just get to choose. We actually get to choose how we feel in this moment based on how we think and based on how we control it. And we get to choose how our cells are going to heal or not heal based on our belief system. And it's strong and it's powerful, and it's not always, you can't just work at it from the conscious mind. Right? You can't just say believe this, but it's really working at getting at some of that subconscious belief systems. And I believe that just about anything can be healed.
Agreed.
So, anybody else? I'm getting on my soapbox way too much this week.
Michelle had where did it go? What is the best way to do a toxic metal challenge test?
It depends. If you mean like the urine test where you test your urine for toxic metals to see if they are eliminated, you would take some like EDTA or what's the other one? DMSO. There's either oral or IV, and then you test to see what comes out. A lot of times when people have heavy metals built up in their body and you just do a blood test or a urine test, you're not going to see very much because it's just stored away in the tissues. It might be in the bone. It might be in the brain. And a lot of it is stored away, and the body's protecting it. It's sequestering it away so that it doesn't damage the volatile tissue. And so you do a challenge test. What I find is that I'm really cautious about doing a challenge test in someone who has neurologic symptoms because I'm afraid that doing the challenge test might throw them over the edge. So I'll always do a non-challenged test first and see what happens. And I remember having this one person who I said, let's just do a non-challenged test because I don't really want to see you go into – she had horrific symptoms where she would – certain times when things got triggered, she just, her speech was impaired and her muscles and her facial muscles were impaired. And so we did a test and we found that there were elevated levels, not like super, super high levels, but they were pretty darn elevated without doing the challenge. So just be careful when you're going to do a toxic challenge. And somebody says about toxic metals and candida. Yeah, if there's toxic metal overload, candida will thrive. So you really do have to address both. Hair analysis is definitely a good way to look for toxic metals. The challenged urine is another way to do it. But again, be super cautious on doing the challenged one. Did Michelle have a question? I see you said you opened her line.
Well, I was wondering if you had heard about, I was listening to a program with Dr. Weatherby, and he said sometimes the candida is there because it actually helps to mop up the toxic metal and so
totally.
Like a protective property of the body.
Yep, totally, totally. So, I have mixed feelings about the order in which to test things, and you probably have the same kind of reservations. You don't want to slap somebody with, like, you know, thousands of dollars worth of tests all at once. You want to go in an order. We want to hit the gut, but sometimes the heavy metals are there as well. So there are things you can be asking them in terms of their exposures to see, you know what, this person worked in this smelt factory or they worked here or there and they really think that they've had heavy metal exposures or they have a mouthful of fillings. And I, you know, really think that maybe the metals are going to be something that we do. And if the candida isn't clearing, that's certainly a way to go. And in some cases where the history warrants looking at heavy metals first, you'd look at the heavy metals and do it and then go with the candida.
Well, what happens when you have chronic candida that you've been working on for a long time? There is a mouthful of amalgams, but the person does not have the funding to remove them. So what's the next best option?
Band-Aids. Right? You do as much as you can to keep them protected. A lot of antioxidants to protect, a lot of liver support, a methylation support to try to support the body in excreting it, gut support to yank these out, Pectisol, like, you know, the that kind of stuff. You got to be careful about yanking it out of storage too quickly. So some of the things like when you do like suppositories of EDTA or things like that, it can be too much and it actually yanks out a lot of the good minerals too. So it'd be going slowly and supporting all of their detoxification mechanisms and getting as much of it out as you can from the circulation and working on the candida at the same time. I mean, I don't, you know, if the candida is actually protecting against the metals, can you be hurting them? Maybe. So balancing the flora to try to help the body be doing it while you're dealing with the metals. But if they can't get the metals out of their mouth, it's like, you know, what's step number one in detoxification?
Removal, if at all possible.
Reduce the toxic load. That's step number one. And if you can't do step number one, it's all Band-Aids from there. So you do the best you can to protect them. You know, massive liver support, massive antioxidant support, doing Pectisol or something gentle that's going to clay, whatever, that can pull and yank the metals out. Things like chlorella and, you know, spirulina and cilantro and things like that to be pulling the metals out so they're not allowed to be circulating as much, and avoiding too much of things that are going to yank them from storage, unless they have neurologic symptoms, and then it's really scary because what do you do, right? Get that mercury out.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Does that help? I know it's not what.
Yes. Well, as much as it can.
It can, right?
But at least I know it's not about simply trying to kill the candida over and over and over and over again.
No. No, I would restore the rest of the balance around it. You know, keep the microbiome as balanced as you can. You know, getting the good probiotics in there, determining what ones are low and replenishing them, and just helping, letting the body try to help it without trying to just keep killing it. Because the more you try to kill it, the more it's going to keep coming back, and the strong survive, right? Because if it's going to try to protect you, what stays after you do a massive killing? The strong ones.
And then you also said in one of your videos that there's a correlation between parasites and grinding teeth. How does that relate?
Yeah, no, I'm trying to remember that mechanism, but my understanding is that parasitic irritation to the body, like if they're laying their eggs, it's usually in the middle of the night, and it just creates a response. I don't remember the exact mechanism. I'd have to go look that one up again. But I don't think grinding your teeth causes parasites.
I was just curious.
I think it's just an aggravation to the nervous system in the middle of the night that the body's like got this hyper irritable nervous system, and grinding teeth is a response. It's like almost like a way to dissipate some of that activity, that nervous activity in the body. That's what I'm not remembering, but intuiting right now.
Okay.
I don't know if it's true or not.
This is Lynn. My understanding too, it has to do with that's where they would lay their eggs. And that's why people grind their teeth at night, because parasites then inhabit the jaw muscles. I remember reading, a study or a story that, where they were taking cattle that they would slaughter, and they could actually see which cows were sick by just looking at them. And I apologize for the graphics here, but so they would slice the throats of the cows and then cut the jaw muscles. And when they would do that, these parasite eggs would pour out onto the floor.
Wow.
So they're actually in the jaw?
In the jaw muscles. That's interesting.
The jaw muscles, yeah. And because we have a full moon coming up, the eggs usually hatch around the time of the full moon, give or take a couple days.
Hmm.
And so when they hatch, that's part of what makes people act crazy.
Wow. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, so much to know and learn. And, you know, I hate to be a harp to keep coming back to the basics, but we do have to come back to the basics and then draw on it from there. And a lot of folks want to skip kindergarten and go right to college in terms of the way they're treating their bodies. And we can't, you know, if we don't have that core foundational piece, it's going to trip us up. So like Lynn's person, you know, that it was working except when they don't do it, right? All of our protocols, most of our protocols do work when people follow them. I mean, not all, but, you know, that's why we're looking deeper and deeper and learning to understand this stuff more and more. But the following, it's like for me, bed, sleep, right? Because you need to sleep more. Yeah, I know I need to sleep more. Oh, well, why don't you take some melatonin? And why don't you do this? I said, why don't I just take my feet and walk into the bed and, you know, lay down in bed and turn out the light? Because that's my cure, right? We're not looking for any heavy-duty cure like melatonin and whatever else. We're looking for get the feet to the bed, let me lay down, and I'll go to sleep. And it's just similar with this. Right, we're looking for a laser, or we're looking for this, that, and the other detox program, and let's just get this person to stop eating crap, start eating good stuff, chewing their food, relaxing while they eat, giving thanks and gratitude while they eat, and go from there. At least start with that basic piece. And I hate to keep harping on it because I don't want to make this oversimplified. It's not. There's a lot going on, and I'm teaching you a lot of ways to look at labs and to look at the big picture. But I don't want to impose, this crazy you know, wild protocols on top of a crappy beginning and a crappy base because the house is going to crumble. And it's just my feeling. Yeah. So anybody else have questions? I don't see any hands. I'm going to look at the Q&A to see if anybody submitted any. And then I'll go back to the chat and see if there's anything else in there I want to comment. Michelle. Okay, good. I gotcha. And then I think Lynn DiMartini had a few. CDC nationwide warning of romaine lettuce E. coli outbreak. So don't stop eating romaine lettuce. Go take your romaine lettuce and rinse it in some food-grade hydrogen peroxide. Rinse it off. Support your own body and your own immune system. You'll be fine. That's just me. That's just my opinion. Okay, so Michelle, I gotcha. Okay, here, may I talk? I don't like chelators. Well, tell me more about that, Lynn. Lynn says I don't like, I would love to, if you're on the phone, open you up and have you talk, because from a homeopathic perspective, you have a lot of different insights out there. You're saying that making sure the organs of elimination, right? That's your first step. There are many metal remedies out there. Are they metal specific or mix of metals? Correlation between parasites and bruxism. Yeast harbors heavy metals, so when you kill candida, you release the metals, right, because they're sequestering it. Right, well, that's why it's important to be careful. Yeah, so Lynn, can we open you up and just have a little, like, how, from a homeopathic perspective, and you're, she on here? Do you mind just sharing a little bit about how your approach is to heavy metals?
Okay. Can you open me?
You're open.
Okay. What is the question exactly?
Well, we're having this discussion about heavy metals, and I've talked about like citrusol, and you said you don't like the chelators, and I assume you meant the heavy duties like the EDTA and the CMSA and all that. So I'd just love to hear that.
The challenges are really hard for people.
Yeah. So when you do homeopathics,
the isodes, you know, we create mixes, and you can buy packages. Different remedies on the market that are a mix, like Metalene and different things like that, that have different metals in them combined. Mm-hmm. But we just combine them in our clearing packets. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's mercury and aluminum and cadmium and all the different ones that are significant.
Do you do it after testing and give each person a specific one based on metal testing, or do you just?
Well, with our clients, we clear them every month, every packet we do it, because if you breathe, you get metals. So, I mean, it's ongoing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, people do metal testing and they find something that's specific, you know, then we will focus on that. I had a client at one point who was cadmium poisoning.
Yeah.
Had cadmium poison, and she was in a horrible state. And we managed to clear all that. So it is possible. I don't think there's anything that can do it like homeopathy can. Obviously, things like chlorella and all that are going to help sequester it out of the body. But as far as getting it out of the cell, the homeopathy is the best for that, I think.
So you're recommending, and we should have a conversation and want to include some of this stuff into the metals, heavy metals module. I want to add some advanced stuff to there. But I think that it sounds like we should always be talking some sort of homeopathic, but assuming we're not, like, you know, trained like you are, from a perspective of just getting one of those packets. Yeah. So one of those metal combinations and just including that along with whatever else.
I mean, there's lots of things that people need clearing all the time. But again, you start with the outermost. You start with making sure their elimination is working, and because, you know, it's, you're detoxing from the outside in there, and you don't want to open it up in the cell until everything else is working right. You know, the lymphatics and all that. So
right.
That's important first. And then, you know, dumping a load of metals. And obviously if someone has metal fillings, you know, you're going to have continuous problems. So, I mean, that would be something that I would really, if that young lady would even have a way to, you know, a payout or something with her dentist, you know, finding a good dentist that'll do it properly, I think that is very important to do.
Mm-hmm. So from the perspective of what I mentioned, would you add to that then doing a homeopathic metal clearing or packet or whatever you're calling it, you know, a protocol to her protocol?
Yeah, well, it's a ongoing detox. Like I said, I clear them all the time. You know, that and EMFs and everything else that we're exposed to every day. So that's an ongoing detox. It's not just a one-time clear.
Yeah, okay. So they just stay on it indefinitely until...
Right.
Okay.
Well, obviously, if you're not having symptoms, it's not as crucial as if you're having symptoms.
Right.
Do it, you know, acutely. But even people who we finish with, you know, they periodically will do a quarterly or every 6 months or something, will do a good clear, you know, because your body is going to acquire more. It's in the air. It's everywhere.
Okay. And when you say clear, are you talking about specific homeopathic formulations taken together at a specific way across a month? Or are you talking just like a one-time combination thing taken?
You can do support remedies that will, you know, be supportive of clearing. When I say clear, that's usually pertaining to our monthly packets that we do when we're doing a timeline. And it's usually associated with an insult that they received, whether it was a vaccination or something like that, because the vaccines are full of metals.
Yeah.
So we're clearing those events. And then, you know, once we're finished doing that, then it's just a matter of maintenance with, you know, support remedies, which would detox different things from their body ongoing.
Great. Super. Thank you.
Okay.
That's very helpful.
Sure.
All right. I think I don't see anything else here. Oh, so Lynn puts in to remove microorganisms like E. coli, soak all of them into apple cider vinegar. Okay, you could do that instead of the food grade hydrogen peroxide. Does that work as well? I don't know if it's as strong. And the hydrogen peroxide also removes parasites and denatures the poison sprays found on the non-organic. So, yeah. Okay. So a combination, I guess, could be really good. Brandon said I was doing Andy Cutler's protocol for mercury detox with AOA as a chelator, and I swear half of my hair fell out after 5 rounds. Wow. Yeah, so Lynn's putting in for removing the washes off of them. Okay. Good. All right. I don't see anything more. I'll check the Q&A one more time, and then we'll head out. Let me just do a refresh. Yeah. All right. So I'll open your lines. Thank you guys for all your great questions. Great discussion again today. As usual, we'll go ahead and see everybody next month. And I hope you all have an amazing holiday with your family. Wherever you might be, and if you're not in the U.S., just think of us and be grateful for whatever you do have. I think Canada has a different, Deb is in Canada. I think you have I think you did do yours earlier, don't you, like October?
It's October, yeah.
Yeah. So thank you, everybody. Have a great week, rest of the day, and we'll talk to you again next month. Bye.
Bye.